Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 90 of Bucks UK TV. I am joined by Pete and Mariana, and we know the result from last night. We're not going to talk about that a great deal. We've got a short clip to play from David Cambridge, who helps run the club. Here's what he has to say from Raymond James Stadium.
Well, that's it, Bucks fans. Another season over. It was pretty tough at the wildcard game last night, just as the team have really performed all season, really. We hoped that they'd turn it around and actually finally get their act together for the playoffs, but it just wasn't to be. Defence, so many missed opportunities, so much poor coverage, some really big plays got us last night, and it's really tough to watch. Offence again, no run game, not trying to put the ball deep at all to stretch out the game, and no red zone. It's just been pretty horrible, really. What's for the future? Will Tom come back? Who knows? What changes are going to be made to the coaching staff? No idea, but something needs to happen. This team has just not been energised all season, and with the quality of players that we've got at our disposal, we really should have been doing so much more. Anyway, that's a wrap for this year. See what the summer brings, see what the draft brings, wait for the schedule to book our trips for next year, and let's get going again for another go at it next season. All the best, go Bucks!
So, as you can hear, it was a hard slog being at the Ray J last night, but I think we all now accept the season is over and it's run its course. Mariana, let's start with you. Kind of, you know, I think we should, you know, not talk about the game in particular, but just reflect on the season as a whole now. Now we've got a bit of perspective and we know that it's over. Kind of, in terms of your sort of year in review, what would you sort of sum up the Bucks in 2022?
I know you say don't talk about the game, but I think the game in itself did reflect the season as a whole.
That's true.
And so the two kind of tie in together, because the game was probably the absolute epitome of showing off all of the problems that we've had throughout the season. So the inability to run the ball. I think we were last in the NFL for rushing. So
setting records in all the wrong ways.
Absolutely. Not really getting any pressure from the defence. And the offence just not clicking. That ball's going and all of us sort of saying, who was that being thrown to? Who was that going to? And there's a difference between throwing it away and you can see that it's just being thrown away. It's being dumped off. It's being thrown into the ground. These were throws into that could have been picked off that were just going awry. So it was even more so, I think. So it kind of felt like it built up over the season into that, funnily enough. So
the thing we were consistent in was our inconsistency itself.
Our inconsistency, yeah, absolutely.
So Pete, we often talk about Bucks beating Bucks, don't we?
Yeah. I don't even think that this season we had a chance to get to that point, because we never seemed to really get started. We were stuttering the whole season. I think we got sort of beating the Cowboys in the first game and beating the Saints. We sort of got a little bit of hype, felt like we were getting somewhere. But even in those games, they weren't settled, easy games. They didn't look like we were anywhere. There were still a lot of missed connections and missed balls that we always put down to being like, it's all right, next week they're going to get that connection. next week. And that's how, for me, the whole season went. Is I thought, oh, okay, we're in the playoffs now. The playoffs, everyone's going to step up a gear and we're going to carry that on. We couldn't even get through one game.
And I think the thing I've taken away from Pete that I know you've said several times is about underperforming or the potential of this team or this team on paper. It is a quality side, isn't it?
Yeah, you think of the names that we've got. How many Godwin part of the yards, Evans part of the yards, Rashad White. Amazing rookie season to come in and play the way that he has and have some of the performances he's had. Lenny hasn't always been on full form, but he's still at times been that wrecking ball that we were looking forward to seeing this year. We've brought on people like Otten, for a rookie tight end to come on and actually start having his name banded about, because he's been showing that he can do it. there's been players that, like I say, on paper, we've got Brady. On paper, you've got everything that you need to win.
Well, we'll come on to talk about Brady, but I think mentioning Cade Otton's a good segue into kind of the highs and the low points. I think it's very easy to talk about the lows, but I think, for me at least, the high points for the year, I think Marianne, you've been talking about this all year long, the tight ends. You know, I don't quite know how many years Cam Brate may or may not have left in him. Rudolph the red-nosed tight end is probably not going to come back again. But with Otton and with Co-Keeft, that's probably quite a good little stable, isn't it?
I think we're very well set for the future in terms of the tight ends. as you say, Cade Otton, I can see him being that number one tight end for us for the coming years. Co-Keeft, I still say he's like that sort of player that will play both in a halfback role sometimes. He lines up sort of just ahead of quite often ahead of Rashad White and blocks ahead of him.
Used to call the Luke blocker position.
Yeah, he's definitely a blocking tight end. You haven't seen him catch so much, but he's been truly instrumental in doing some blocking on that line where we've been a bit weak in places. It'd be nice to see. I think, as you say, Kyle Rudolph is probably he's not going to come back. I think he was a healthy scratch anyway weekend. So Cam Brate just seemed to lose his step. So we'll probably get someone else. I would think some sort of veteran or someone with a bit more experience, because it would be good to have someone with a bit of experience alongside those two. But yeah, really happy with how our tight ends look, at least moving forward.
And I guess go on.
Brate's even come out himself saying that he knows that his contract's a big hit on the cost cap. So he sort of sees himself as being a cost cap casualty come next season, which will be a shame, because obviously he's always been that, well, in the years previous, he was always that steady figure of that red zone target that we had known for so many years and loved. And he was sort of like a Buccaneer through and through, that you sort of hate seeing players like that leave. I hope he retires, does an Ali Marpet and retires as a Buccaneer, then moves on somewhere else. But I don't know what is.
I mean, he could do a Mike Evans and renegotiate his contract down a bit in order to stay. I guess you, as a player, you kind of need to be conscious of your value in the here and now, don't you? And what that means. But Marianne, I was going to say, the other group of players you probably want to talk about are the running backs. Because I'm a bit confused. I mean, playoff Lenny, he wasn't really there last night. And I guess over time, Rashad White has been sort of edged into the starting position.
Yeah. So, Rashad White has really come on over the course of the season. He's really, as you say, put himself into that number one spot. So I think that moving forward, he's going to be that lead back. Lenny, I still think he's got the opportunity to play. It's good to mix up between running backs, as we know, and not rely too heavily on one. Having a good rookie running back is also really useful for us, because Lenny's on a slightly bigger contract. So having the two to split between, I don't see a reason to sort of shop Lenny out. I still think he's got...
He's got a long contract now, hasn't he, as well? So he's not going anywhere from memory.
Yeah, no, he's not going anywhere.
And maybe the O-line problems fed into both of them struggling at times. So
yeah, that's hard to put it down to.
Yeah, hopefully that will mix it up. I don't really see... what was disappointing was Keshawn Vaughan kind of just disappeared completely, I think. I was hoping to maybe see some of him a bit more down the stretch, and he came on for a couple of runs, really did nothing. So I don't see him.
He didn't really get much exposure in special teams either. Actually, I think Giovanni Bernard, when he was back again and being healthy, that seems to be where he was a contributor. Actually, it's quite unusual for a vet to have that sort of special teams role. But I think it sort of meant, I don't mind playing wherever I can play.
Yeah,
Keyshawn offered anything different, did he?
It's true. He wasn't that change of pace back. He's not particularly different.
Rashad had the cut and Devin had the power, so he wasn't really bringing anything in to sort of fight, you know, create his position.
I guess there's no pressure to get rid of him, given that we know his depth and he's still on that rookie contract.
I mean, it'll depend what comes up in the draft, won't it? There's always the next player coming through that's going to come in. So when we get post-draft and we've got, a sort of 90-man roster again, is he going to cut it against a new young rookie that might come in sort of fourth, fifth, late round and really battle for that third spot?
That's right.
But I think we're strong still in running backs. Yeah. And I don't, it's not an area of the team that I would worry about massively.
And I think if we're talking highs and lows, the next one, wide receivers, Pete, that for me is still the standout unit on this team. We don't yet have any update on Russell Gage, do we, from last night? So we certainly hope that he's doing well, because that really took the wind out of the game at the end, didn't it?
Oh, definitely. You were sort of hoping, if anything, that they were just going to call it off at that point, because after seeing that happen and having that worry and then still having so many points to try and find, you just sort of thought, just call it quits here. But yeah, no, I think they reported that he's got a neck injury, but I think he's stable. But yeah, the wide receiver room hasn't been an issue for really a number of years. Even when we brought in AB and he did his sort of stuff, even when we had other players that were just coming in for being rotation, they were still picking up game-winning touchdowns and changing games as they went. But we've always had that solid 1-2 of Chris Evans and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin for a long time that you could rely on. Julio came in and did stuff at the right time. But yeah, it's always been a room.
Yeah, Julio seemed to crop up in some games and sort of drop off, go to sleep in some others. We didn't really see much, I guess, from Breshad Perriman, did we? Not in the way that we were hoping. He sort of, when he went away, was it to the Jets? And then sort of came back. He never seemed to be the same player that we thought he was. And I guess if that's the highs, then Mariana, does that mean the O-line is the lows?
I'm afraid so. We lost players on that O-line.
Chappell was a big loss, it turns out, wasn't he?
Yeah, massive.
And we didn't think it would be. Yeah. That was the... We picked up Shaq Mason.
Yeah.
And a lot of us thought he would actually be an upgrade. And
especially as he'd been around Brady before. You felt like him coming in, they would have that connection already or that understanding, and it would give Brady that bit of support and confidence, but it seemed to not really work out.
Now, that position was his natural position as well, so it wasn't like we were playing him out of position. We can understand that on the left side of the line, we had to make some adjustments. Obviously, losing Jensen, immediately as the season starts is massive, and we couldn't really get that left side sorted out, that left guard.
I think it would be credit to Hainsey. He did step up.
He did amazing as taking out centre. Yeah.
Yeah,
and Luke Gehrke couldn't really take over. I don't think he ever really expected to see the field. I take it was always going to be Hainsey in that position, Jensen in the centre, and then as soon as that happened and he had to start coming in, it was a massive jump up. And unlike Wirfs in his rookie season, Wirfs fell into it, went for it, was a natural. Gadecki didn't really take to it like a fish to water.
I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Although there are only 32 teams in the NFL, I'm not sure how many of them, if they lost a member of their starting lineup, would be able to have the depth of someone that would qualify in the same way. And you think, we mentioned Cap. Obviously, there's Ali Marpet you mentioned as well. I guess the big question mark for me, and it's a question mark with lots of dollar signs hanging over it, is Donovan Smith, who is far and away the highest paid player on this team. Massive, massive sort of cap hit. And we know that that's not entirely science, because there's people have different cap hits in different years and they defer things and bring things forward and stuff. But, I mean, he's got a big contract and I guess that puts a bit of a price on his head, doesn't it?
What was worrying with him is he seemed to take a step backwards from the previous...
That's pass blocking. He's meant to do that.
he
I think it that relationship with
so well,
Ali,
didn't he?
Losing
he played
that.
So well in those Super Bowl in the Super Bowl year and last year's run, like deep into the playoffs. But this year he was struggling, and he did mention maybe having some sort of, I don't think injuries, but maybe mental or personal problems or something that was affecting his gameplay. So maybe that played into it. I just think, who do you replace him with?
Yeah.
left tackle is such a hard one to replace.
I guess it might not be a question of who you replace him with. It's who do you keep on or acquire if you don't retain him, maybe, I think, is what it might come down to. We don't know what the cap's going to do next year. I think a lot of teams are assuming it's going to go up, and it's going to go up significantly after the smaller increases over the COVID years. But then if it does go up, maybe that creates a bit of a frenzy where other teams find themselves with money and we, you know, we get a bit of inflation, a bit like we're seeing in the UK economy at the moment. So I don't quite know what that means. But obviously, it comes about who we can retain, who we're going to want to do. Anyway, we could talk about economics.
I think he's too much of a risk going forward. He's, you know, we all laugh about it on the forum of it being, you know, holding 76 is being called every game. He's becoming too much of a liability, and you can't losing yards. You know, we talk about Mike Evans and how many penalties he creates to gain us yards. You can't keep losing so many yards just down to one player. If it was once in a while, last season, once in a while, the Super Bowl season, he was unreal. And I don't know whether that was more that whether his relationship with Ali Marpet, was it that Ali stepped up in that season, was having that, you know, once in a lifetime season where he was unreal, which was making Donovan have a great season, losing him, his right hand man, has brought, you know, knocked Donovan's confidence a little bit, and it's shone this year of how poor he's been when he's got a rookie next to him.
No one the other side of him. Maybe he would have had Gronk the other side of him staying in and chipping a bit as well. There were quite a few games with Gronk where he didn't even go out to catch passes. He just stayed in and kept Brady upright.
So were there two players that were basically making Donovan look better than he was?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Well, I mentioned Brady. That's obviously going to have to be, I think, the biggest question mark again in the, across the NFL, if not just for the Bucs. I think I've been amazed the last few years. The media attention and just the pressure that just having that name on your roster brings, it's astounding. And obviously, you know, we've all been honoured and pleased to be able to see the guy in person and playing and sort of ticking off a bucket list. I mean, Mariana, from what I hear, there's going to be whichever headline you read, you're going to be able to read into it whatever you want, aren't you?
I think last night I watched the press conferences and his was fairly short and to the point. And apparently he's off to the Raiders, according to everyone who was in the live chat for last night's press conference. So that was quite interesting to see everyone welcoming to the Raiders. I don't think you can put too much on what his plans are. We know he's sitting on a very lucrative punditry contract that's sitting out there for him if he hangs up his boots this year. I personally don't feel like he's going to come back to the Bucs. That's hand on heart. I just don't think he will. I think we have to accept that it is kind of time to move on and rebuild. What I've said and what I think a lot of us were saying, if you look at the crop of QBs who are playing in these playoffs and moving forward, most of them have some level of mobility. And I'm not talking about you have to go and get the yards yourself as the running back like some do. But
an extending the play, isn't it? When the pocket breaks down, extending the play.
And particularly seeing some of that last night, there was no real ability for him to sort of break away, get back, break out in the way that you see some of these young guys doing. He'll know that himself. I'm sure he can look at tape, he can look at what's around him and make his decision. But I can't see him back at the Bucs. That's
Do you agree, Pete?
I agree in the sense of it being that the game has evolved to a situation now where if he comes back next year, 45, all that sort of stuff, he's doesn't fit the style of the NFL anymore. It doesn't matter whether he stays with us, whether he goes to Raiders, if he goes to San Francisco, it doesn't matter where he goes. Everyone now wants a mobile quarterback because you don't want sacks. You want him to be able to, even if he's gaining 5 yards, you still want a quarterback to be able to make that split decision and gain those yards for you to give you a better, you know, think how bad we've been on third down this year because it's been so long. Whereas if he was more mobile, he would have closed it down.
Well, it's not been so long. I mean, third and one's been the hardest down for the Bucks to convert. I don't know. I know what you're saying. I think, and without sounding a little bit too long in the tooth, when Brady was at college, most quarterbacks were pocket passers. You're right. The game has changed. But I without getting too philosophical, I wonder if it's because a lot of college teams now do that sort of option style, pistol sort of. It's a different style of offense that they run. So when quarterbacks come into the NFL, they come into the NFL with a different set of tools, and a good coach will use the player to their own strengths.
Yeah, so it could
be like a, you know, he comes from, there are no real crop of pocket passers coming through, so I guess that might be why it's sort of circular. But I still think he's got a big strong arm. That play in the dying seconds where he slightly just inches short of Mike Evans, you know, that was a long pass that was in the air, not very long. It had some,
I definitely don't deny
it,
that he's still got the arm. He's still got all of the capability to still be the GOAT. Mm. It's just that I think the game has changed. If we can't give him the O-line to give him the time and give him the protection, then it's not going to be any different from what we've seen this year. Because this year has been all of those overthrows, underthrows, you know, throwing it way too early, just loads of mistakes that he hasn't sort of played like, because for quite a few years he had really good protection, and then this year he had no protection and no time, and we saw loads of mistakes. So unless we can give him what he wants to give him the time, then I don't see it getting any better.
That's a good point.
I mean, his stats are still amazing, and if you look at the passing yards that he's got for us this year, it looks outstanding. But
I think he still led the NFL in completions, didn't he?
But he's had to throw so many times for it this year. That's the only.
You think back to Peyton Manning's final years where he couldn't turn his head more than 20 degrees and no pass went more than 15 yards. He's led the NFL, I think, in completions, you know, and I haven't even seen him coming out to press conferences with ice on that shoulder. It's not like he's sort of patching him up like Terminator style.
It's hard to act as if he's sort of past it because he does keep himself in such good shape.
He's not over the hill at all. It's just the fact that the game has changed in a way to be that he's almost hasn't got a place in it at the minute, of it being that I don't know what team would have the O-line that would give him the time.
Yeah, I'm not sure going to the Raiders. Weapons. Yeah, going to the Raiders doesn't really give him a better chance of winning, I don't think.
No.
They talked about the 49ers, but they're the ones that are still winning in the playoffs, so they're not going to change a good
Yeah, that would seem a very odd move.
I also wonder whether, you know, we always talk about, did he have a hand in Bruce going? Did he have a hand in who's the... So it'll be interesting to see whether he has a hand in saying, yeah, I will stay if Leftwich has gone and, you know, Joe Bloggs has come in and, you sign this person and we make it work.
I mean, I sound like a fanboy and I know it's not realistic, but I said on the forum last night, Tom Brady for offensive coordinator and starting QB. I don't think the NFL has ever had a player coach, but I'd be up for it. Give him the reins.
First time for anything.
I think that's the sort of only way that I could potentially see him having a role still, because I just can't see him coming back to the organisation where we stand at the moment. And certainly, I think, as Pete has said, I don't think the play calling just hasn't been there. He must know himself. He must be looking at the playbook and some of the play calls and thinking, we could be doing better than this.
You saw him changing a lot.
Yeah, when it goes to the hurry up,
yeah,
he always seems to play better in that sort of two-minute offense where he's running it and changing it up a bit. So...
I guess the other thing we have to think about is whether, obviously, he had a lot of off-field things going on this season. I wouldn't wish anyone a marriage breakdown on them, but to have your marriage breakdown publicly in the middle of your day job, you know, that's got to be hard to deal with.
Yeah, luckily they had such a good prenup that it was over like that.
Yeah, yeah, they certainly didn't want to air their dirty laundry in public, which is eminently advisable. Well, that's the offence. We'll come back to the defence in a minute, but let's just take a little time out because there's obviously been some good times for the Bucks UK this year as well. Pete's got a very knowing smile. What have your highs been for the club this year, Pete?
I loved the Birmingham watch party. That was brilliant. Getting Gene to come and Mariana put on a great spread, even though it did burn the mouth off most people with the old Indian. But no, it was a great night. We had a great time. And then Munich, I mean, you can't get better than Munich. I don't know how you top it. Apart from a trip to Tampa where everyone goes, I don't see how you'd ever top Munich. Because it was just such a great laugh.
It's been a great year. Mariana, for you?
Yeah, I mean, Munich, everyone's going to say Munich. It was such a great trip. And so many of the members involved, I think it was the sheer weight and numbers that we were able to get come along was something special, I think, for that. But as you say, the watch parties in general, obviously I wasn't able to get to the others, but seeing the social media,
yeah, just seeing clips the pictures
and things,
yeah.
Yeah, it's
the good amount of people turning up to stuff has just been so great to see.
Yeah, and hopefully
we often get sent emails through our website where there's sort of an expat or an American over on holiday saying, I'm over in London. Where's the watch party this weekend? And we have to carefully explain to them that we all live in the four corners of the UK, which isn't as teeny tiny as they think it actually is, and that we don't get together to watch every game. Obviously, we have the forum where we chat during games, and it's been another excellent year for the forum of being able to talk during the games. The three watch parties, the Leeds, the Birmingham, the London, has been a really nice way. And it's been, as you said, it's been different people at the watch party. So each time we've managed to reach out to those members over the club, and like you say, Munich, there were over 100 of us in Munich. It was a guilty pleasure that we got to be there, when really it should have been about the NFL and the Bucks fans in Germany. And meeting Carsten and all the other guys in Bucks Germany was a real pleasure. I think we've made some friends that we're going to stick with for a long while. And we'll when we end the podcast, we'll end on the Munich note, because I think that's kind of the signature part of the year. So yeah, it's been a really good year. And if you want to be part of that, obviously head over to bucksuk.org, click on join, sign up to the forum and join in the chat. Take part,
yes,
and you are more than welcome. This is not a fan club with any egos or cliques. It's very welcoming. Whether you're a man, a lady, or anything in between, old, young, there's someone that is more than willing to talk Bucks with you as well.
And the fantasy leagues. Don't forget the fantasy.
Of course, the fantasy. How many of it was it? Five this year.
Yeah.
Five fantasy leagues. I lost count of them. Yeah.
It was great. I'm not sure who won our one.
And of course, at the AGM that we have in the off season, we will be presenting those trophies. And I've been promised an upgraded version of Buck Pong to decide other skill competitions as well. But probably the less said about that, the better. So let's have a turn over to the defensive side of the ball then, and sort of in our year in review. Pete, you can start. Pick a bit. Do you want to start with the secondary? Because we know you like Antoine Winfield.
No, I'm going to start with the person that we've probably spoken the most on about at the forum, which is JTS. And the fact that this year was supposed to be his year to take over from JPP and turn into a man and show us why he was the number one draft pick for us and why he's going to be a somebody. And he's just seemed to have fallen flat this year. And he can't, there isn't any swing moves. It's just one move and then he'll get pushed off and shoot past. It's just been, it's been a heart. It's for me personally, it's been heartbreaking to see that he hasn't achieved what we hoped he was going to, hasn't achieved it.
How much was that, Mariana? Can we cut him a slack for having Shaq Barrett not on the other side of the line? Or
I mean, I've said this before, and I'm going to stick with my "he will come good" line. I was thinking about it the other day, and we must remember that when we picked him late in the first round. It wasn't like he was a number one, or even a top 10. Mm-hmm. He was a late in the first round, very much like Logan Hall was top of the he could have been that top of the second.
Yeah.
Very late in the first, top of the second sort of area. So give him time to grow. Give him Shaq Barrett next to, like, on the other side. A little bit like, I guess we were saying, Luke Gudecki struggled to play as a rookie this year on the O-line. I think he's still, JTS was still growing into the role in his first year. He didn't play a lot of snaps coming into it. So this really was his first of playing every down, every
he had. So Gudecki came in from rookie and was put in the team. JTS had a year of training with JPP and Barrett, and he had people that he could sit there and, what do I need to do here? How do you get around this? What do you do? And he's not seemed to have brought... I thought he'd have a bag of tricks.
He would feel be like he was over like trying to overcompensate for trying to be that number one when he probably isn't quite ready to be that number one player. As I say, there can be quite a drop off in quality between like a top 10 pick and a top of the sort of bottom of the first round, top of the second round type level pick. And we have to remember where we got him in the draft. Yes, he was a first round pick, but he was a late in the first round pick, and they take time to develop, unfortunately.
Yeah. Maybe we've just been spoilt with some of the draft picks that we've had. You know, think of Devin White. He had a drop off a little bit in one season, but actually he finished that season quite strong still. And Anton Winfield, he's just, and worse. Yeah, and these are players that have literally been plug and play, and they've been unreal from the beginning. So maybe.
I think JTS is a physical specimen in the sense that you look at him in the huddle or next to other players. He is big, he is lean, he is muscular, he's everything you want in an athlete. But I think he kind of does the wrong thing at the wrong time for me. You talked about this, Pete. When he's pass rushing, he's all about the bull rush. He's sprinting. He's got speed. He's got power. But that takes him to the outside, and he's too easily moved away from a quarterback that steps up into the pocket.
Yeah.
Yet when it's in the open field situation and someone like Devin White will just come in and just take someone's head off, that's when JTS seems to be watching the game. He's often next to the tackle when it's made, or he sort of over-pursued the tackle. I kind of want him to slow down a little bit in his pass rush and speed up a little bit in the open field, and kind of think more when you're pass rushing and think less when you're kind of just use your reactions and your instincts. I don't know. I think he's definitely coachable. I think we also have to admit that he's not going anywhere, because again, the modern nature of the NFL and the salary cap, he's under that first deal. He's an early round pick. So we're going to have to find a way to make it work. My gut is whether we go back to some sort of 4-3 type defense rather than a 3-4, because the 3-4 defense means you've got to have outside linebackers that are effectively sack monsters. That's how the 3-4 works. And I mean, what do you think? Do you think Shaq Barrett's going to be able to come back from that injury? And he's no spring chicken, a bit in the cam break kind of category. Mariana, do you think we're going to see him again?
I think it's heavily dependent on whether he can come back, and then how effective he is when he does. So time will tell on that. But then with the scheme change, would that not also point to potentially a change in coaching also, which is...
Potentially, which is...
Depends, we're talking about coaches.
Let's come on to talk about coaches a little bit, but you're right. I always find it annoying when a coach brings in their system, because their system should be looking at the players they've got and making them in the optimum configuration. That's what a good coach should do. But I've talked about the O-line, sorry, the D-line.
I feel like with Shaq this year, before the injury, he wasn't getting home as much. I don't think either of them were getting home as much. And it's easy to sort of put it down to Sue not being there, but it felt like, especially the Super Bowl year, Sue and Vita were just, again, it was the perfect year, the Super Bowl year, because everyone seemed to have that partner next to them, whether it was Donovan Smith and Ali Marpet, whether it was Devin White and Lavonte David, and whether it was Vita and Sue. You seemed to have a lot of people that had that perfect, like, mirror to them that did their job and did their job without having to rely on anyone else. Whereas this year, it's felt like Hicks obviously didn't play a lot of the season. When he's come in, he still hasn't really been the beast that he was sort of sold to us coming in, that he was going to replace Sue and he was going to be younger. And yes, he, you know, he's been injury prone, but he was going to be all right. So I don't feel like him and Vita have had the same connection where they haven't played enough together.
Yeah.
But they weren't creating that drive up the middle that gave people the edge to come in. So I feel like even Shaq this year hasn't. So maybe that's something with Hicks being a free agent, maybe that's something that next year we'll get someone else in that's going to change that up.
What I will say for our D-line is that I still think we've got quite a lot of depth and a lot of unsung heroes on there, on that line. Anthony Nelson played quite well at times.
I think he's a free agent. He's a free agent.
Yeah, Nunes Rogers again. He played very well. So we've got a few that are, you know, unsung heroes that are playing very well that are more rotational players. That it will be kind of key that I think we need to actually lock them in and not let them go in free agency.
Yeah, definitely. Nacho's a beast. When we were watching him at Munich in person, there were times where Nacho was having to get double teamed. So, Jemmy, just to hold him back, he gives 110% every game. And it's a shame that, he hasn't been getting the recognition that he does. But, he would be a great person to keep. But he's still not – he's a man mountain, but he's always still not Vita or Sue size or dominance, is it? It's sort of, that's such a hard position because you need them to absorb so much of an O-line to give
everyone
else a
chance. And those players are fairly unique. Again, there aren't 32 Vita Veyas in the NFL.
No.
Not even, you know, it's like you say, each team has a Sue or a Veya that can eat up two people. It's just not an everyday occurrence, is it?
Yeah, and we do have to give Veya credit as well, because I think Veya has been that consistent player on that D-line. And yes, he gets a bit more credit than he used to now. But, I do, you know, we've got to talk about positives as well as negatives. So I really want to, shout out Vita Veya. He barreled through last night as well. There were a couple of times.
But he's our sack leader.
Amazing sack last night.
And actually, Akeem Hicks,
sack leader.
You mentioned Akeem Hicks as being a bit of a disappointment. I think we got from Akeem Hicks what I expected to get from Akeem Hicks. He came in, he was a reasonable starter when he was healthy, struggled to stay healthy, but made some splash plays. So I kind of feel like that was value for money in that sense. But I guess the secondary for me is probably the biggest question mark for this team, because for years we've said we've got this young secondary, they're all going to grow old together, and they're no longer spring chickens. They should be in their prime. And again, it's where you look down the roster: Jamel Dean, SMB, Carlton Davis, Mike Edwards, Antoine Winfield. But when they all come together, it's still not gelling, is it?
But Dean was left out last night for some strange reason. Yet for three quarters of this season, he's been the outstanding corner in this team. He's been absolutely dominant in that position, more than Carlton Davis, I would say. And then to get dropped in the last game, maybe he was holding an injury that we haven't found out about. But he did have quite a quick drop off towards the end of the season. But whether that's where, for a lot this season, our defense have spent way too long on the field.
And also, I think now what we have to point out is, yes, we started with this nice young team that we're going to grow old together, but they've also grown up to all sort of hit free agency at the same time. So we do have Edwards hitting free agency, Sean Murphy Button hitting free agency. I think who else is hitting free? Levante David in terms of linebackers is hitting free agency, but. Dean, as we said, is hitting free agency. You know, so we've got a bunch of them that are now hitting free agency together, which is a bit of a concern. It's nice to see them sort of come together as a secondary unit, but it's also a bit worrying when three or four of them potentially could leave you at the end of the season. So I actually thought Sean Murphy Bunting came on quite well this season after being left out early. Don't know if that was maybe a thing to kind of get him motivated, but it seemed to work. He seemed to come on quite well when he actually came back into the team. sort of in the second half.
I was pleased with Logan Ryan, and again, I had some injury concerns over the season, but again, another plug and play free agent that didn't, you know, play under.
He could change a game. There were times when he came in, he could change the tempo quite quickly and really seemed to put his mark on the game. Like you say, he'd come in and you'd soon start hearing his name.
I think the thing that was exposed last night, and it was a stat that I had read a lot in the previews, was kind of how low we were in terms of QB rating allowed for tight ends. So it feels like we've talked about this before, how whether it's scheme or personnel or a combination of the both, whenever you're watching, I don't know, a Sean Payton coach D, every ball's contested, everything's tight. Whereas every now and then you'd just be like, how is that player so open? And we did have a lot of tight ends sort of catching balls and running with it.
I think
the miscommunication is just ridiculous in this team. All season it's just been that, like you say, this player's that Edwards lost his player in the end zone for their touchdown. You think, how are you losing the man that you're meant to be marking? Why are you dropping off at the back of the end zone thinking that he's going to get picked up by somebody else? Don't worry about that. Just stick on him. You're covering him. He can't get the ball. They can't get a touchdown. Make him force it somebody else. But there's been so much misconnection all season of them not seeming to know of what their role is or what somebody else's role. How many times have we seen it where someone would be running down the sideline and the player will drop off to go and somewhere and you just think, well, where are you going? How do you not know to follow that man? I know it seems easy from watching on TV, but how can we leave people so open?
Yeah, the tight ends thing.
Corrections.
The tight ends thing that you point out. I think the game that really stood out to me as being a problem, it was kind of in the middle of the season, more or less, which was against KC. And you know who you're playing against KC because you know you're playing against one of the top tight ends in the league in Travis Kelce. So you know you're going to struggle. And he had an absolute stormer of a game against us. And I couldn't understand how a guy with bright yellow shoes and bright yellow gloves was getting missed so often. But it was young rookies last night. And it's been whoever plays at tight end, whether they're a rookie or a veteran, We definitely have something that they need to look at. There is how we defend tight ends, because as you say, they've been getting open, and it's not in a particular position. It's not through the middle or on the outside. It's just wherever a tight end turns up, they seem to be wide open and not covered.
Maybe it's
we never meet them at the sticks. Yeah. We never meet them at the sticks, do we? Yeah. It's always 10 backing yards off behind the sticks. Yeah,
presumably because we're sending too many people blitzing, trying to get some coverage or some pressure. Yeah. Who knows? So then special teams, my favourite part of the ball game. Now, if I were to give, you know, grades, everyone thinks I'm always harsh on special teams. I think our special teams squad, I think, played above and beyond our offence and our defence this year.
I'd say once we got rid of...
The non-returner, yeah.
Jalen Darden. I can't even forget his name. Yeah, once we got rid of him and we brought in Tompkins. That seemed to change the return game. We seemed more confident in the return game.
And you could see last night Tompkins was trying to make something out of nothing, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You really want to see him grow into that role next year. I really want to see him carry on in that. I think he can be really solid in that return role. And then grow into hopefully being a sort of more regular rotational receiver as well. He really does look quite talented and has got a bit of, you know, he runs to the edges, he runs to the outside, which is I think what we've been saying for ages. But yeah, in general, as you say, the special teams have done well throughout. I mean, we've got to probably give. It's going to be a tough one this year, Rookie of the Year. Because I think we're looking at
Kamada.
Well, we've got, you know, Austin and Rashard, but yeah, Kamada. What can you say? He has been superb throughout the season. But it's not just been
the punts. You think of how many times he's got that last minute tackle to just save us from being humiliated in a return touchdown. So yeah, just things like that, he's won it for me.
He already seems to be a bit of a leader on the field as well, you know, because people underestimate the special teams huddle, if you like. But, you know, I've seen him talking to people and slapping people on the head on the sideline, which you don't tend to, you know, kickers are normally solitary little things that, you know, down there bashing a ball into a net 15 times to keep themselves busy, you know. But I think, yeah, I mean, for me, rookie of the year.
Yeah.
If not for the NFL.
Yeah, I know there's been a little bit of talk about people sort of saying, well, Suckup, he's missed a couple of long kicks and should we move on from Suckup? I'm hesitant. We don't seem to have a lot of luck with kickers, and he's a guy that will kick most of the short kicks quite happily. I mean, again, if we look at last night as an example, how many missed extra points.
I think May is a good kicker as well. Mm. He's got a strong leg, and for that to, you know, Suckup, like you say, well, the answer is just don't kick a field goal more than 50 yards.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, you don't ever put yourself in a position where you've got to kick beyond that and you'll be fine. He's so consistent that moving on from him would be a massive, for me personally, I would look at it as a massive gamble to take that risk and say, actually, we're going to let you go. You're a little bit old, so we're going to move on and see what else out there. I can't see that there's anything else there that's as consistent as he is in those 40-yard, 45-yard kicks.
Yep.
Okay, but if he's any longer than that, we shouldn't really be putting him in the position.
Yeah, totally. You know, obviously bringing competition again in the sort of pre-season and having, but I, at the moment, I would rather have someone that is 99% consistent on the other kicks and we know that we just don't give him a deep one, then have someone that potentially will shank the odd close kick and maybe lose us a game by 3 points, which we've seen in the past with our kickers.
Well, maybe this is a good segue into the coaching side of things, because obviously as a coach, I can imagine you'd want a kicker that's got range, because if a drive stalls, at least you get 3 points out of it. But what we haven't done is that sort of no risk it, no biscuit type thing of, if we're that close enough, let's just go for it. Because what are the chances? You know, I think we saw the last night, the Cowboys. The thing I liked the most about the Cowboys, and there aren't many things I like about the Cowboys, but the thing was they had their foot on our throats and they followed through and they kept going and they were fourth down and they went for it. They had the game won and they were like, we're going to put this out of reach. And that, I really liked that attitude. It wasn't arrogant. It wasn't disrespectful. They were just playing to win and playing hard and making calculated risks. And it feels like that's, you know, our third and one game and our red zone offense needs a complete rethink. I think having a kicker that can't kick for more than 50 might force us to be a bit more creative.
I think it's a contrast in that we were in a position where we were, I think, fourth and three. We were already quite a way down, roughly somewhere around midfield. I'm not going to say I remember exactly where we were. I was in the pits of despair, I think. But
the tears were in the way at that point.
Yeah. But at that point, I think we all were screaming, let's just go for it. It can't get worse, so let's just go for it.
Yeah,
we might move it, we might do something. And we didn't. We went for a punt. We went for the safe, let's punt it away. And I think they may even have scored on their next possession. I can't remember exactly, but it just felt like there's the difference. There's the contrast.
So I feel like that's a little bit of a problem in this year. Is that, have you not almost felt like we haven't had any confidence to even go for it on some fourth downs? I know there's been the occasional, you know, Tommy sneak, but apart from that, it's felt like this year we haven't had the heart to almost back ourselves in those moments to say, oh, we'll go for it. Because the confidence hasn't been there. Whether that's come from Tom, whether that's come from Foles, Leftwich, whether it's just in every player that, you know, when we scored with Scotty Miller again in the Super Bowl year, it's sort of that we were just having that momentum of where any throw seemed to just go our way. This year, it felt like Tom was doubting it before he threw it and it wasn't going to make it because it was already carrying doubt that was weighing it down. That's what I felt like this season's been.
So we'll start with you, Pete. If you are the owners, are you going to let anyone go? So, I mean, Byron Leftwich, the frustrations with the play calling, but it's a top five passing offense and, you know, Super Bowl winning coordinator. Todd Bowles, I think it's become a bit of a meme on the forum about his sort of lack of emotion, but a Super Bowl winning defense and a proven defensive coordinator. So on the, it's kind of, we're back-to-back champions. We made the playoffs, but it wasn't what we were hoping for. So kind of, it's hard, isn't it? Because sometimes if you're an owner and you keep firing everyone, no one's going to come and want to coach for you.
Can you drop him back down to being just the defensive coordinator? Mm. That's the thing I'd worry about, because, like you say, doing just that job, he's brilliant. He's got his niche. He shouldn't have ever been made head coach. He should have stayed as his niche of being a defensive coordinator. But could you say to him, oh, we're going to get someone else in. We're going to get, yeah, everyone's talking about Sean Payton. We're going to get Sean Payton to be the offensive coach and the head coach. You've got to take the knock and go back down to being, and would he want to do it? But
I think he does want to be a head coach. The fact he's you don't turn up to all those interviews and go through that process and take on what's probably one of the hardest jobs in the world without wanting to do it.
So that's where I think that we're going to struggle.
But you're the owner. You've got to make the decision. What are you doing?
I'm dropping him back down to defensive coordinator.
And you're going to bring in a new head coach.
Yeah.
Is that an offensive-minded head coach, whether it's Sean Payton or not?
Yeah, that's an offensive-minded head coach. Because he can, Todd Bowles can do the job, the defense. You haven't got to worry about that side of it. He knows what he's doing. He can run that to a T. But on the offense, it just didn't seem to ever, I know you're saying about us being the leading passing, but it just never seemed to really, there was no excitement. I'm not saying you want a trick play all the time or you want, but there was no excitement. Nothing ever seemed to, we didn't mix it up enough. Like, we all joke about the run up the gut on first down, but you can't bash that out game after game after game after game and expect it to suddenly work. You've got to start looking at that and changing it up, and he wasn't doing that.
Mariana, you agree?
I'm going to go brutal, I think.
Go on then.
Yeah, as
you're going to press the plunger.
Yeah, we've stuck with these guys for a few years now, so it's not like we are just chopping and changing. However, I think we have to look at the overall performance of the team. Winning the division is great, but on a losing record is not so great. If Brady really does leave at the end of this season, then maybe it is time to sort of tear it all up and rebuild and bring a new team in and see where that goes. I'm not convinced that... While I agree with Pete that, yes, Todd Bowles can absolutely do the job of a D coordinator, the realistic thing is that if we bring in a new head coach, they'll bring their own team with them normally anyway. They're not going to normally want to come in and say, OK, well, you've still got this defensive coordinator here, who also, by the way, was the head coach last year. It's just the dynamic I don't see working. So no. I think it's a case to tear it up and start again. And that's, there you go, Jason. Off you go, Jason. Like, go,
I guess
it.
You can, I think there's a big sort of combination caveat you made there, that if you've got a new quarterback. So I think what Brady probably doesn't want to do is learn a new offense. But I think if you've got a new quarterback coming in, that gives you the opportunity. And I know when I talk to Adam about this, we just like go purple in the face. We just want an offense that gets players open. Stop making the arrogant, throw it up and Mikey will come down with it, chuck it to Godwin 1 yard away from a summer defender so he's got a contested catch. Why don't we have these high-low combinations? Where are our slants? Where are our hooks over the middle? Why are we, you know, why do we just keep doing this run up the gut on first down? It's predictable and it's not clever. Offense. So I'm not saying, you know, gimmick, because I think what was the chip guy that came into the Eagles a few years ago? It was meant to be some sort of offensive genius from college and it went flat.
Chip Kelly,
but, yeah. Yeah, that's it. They kind of, we don't necessarily want to go down that road either, but just something that's a bit creative.
Yeah, and I don't know who those new positions go to. I have no idea who's floating around, who's the next one to sort of pick up or so forth. I really don't, but I just think I'm leaning on the assumption that Brady is probably leaving us, and so I agree. Like, let's start again. Let's get whether it be Trask learning anew, or whether we even start with a new QB. Even I don't know how that's going to go, but certainly I think that if Brady's going, it's our time to maybe change the whole sort of coaching staff at that point as well. And see what we can build on moving forward.
Brilliant.
I think that's what was so annoying about the Panthers game is that we didn't get to see Trask. Instead of having Gabbert on, we should have had Trask on for just one quarter of that, just to have a look at whether he's got anything. Because when he came on, he had the arm, but it was too late in the game.
And he was around the other third stringers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. It was never going to show us anything. And I don't even know whether they're getting... I don't know what goes on at training, obviously, but it feels like they're not even getting to see what they've got with him.
Well, normally, the QB3 is the one running the scout offense for the defense that week to get them in play. Obviously, there's Ryan Griffin somewhere in the mix, and who knows what's going on there. But it seems like we've got a lot of old men holding clipboards.
Yeah, it does.
So that might change as well, maybe with the cap. So that's our take on it. The next time you'll be hearing from us probably will be our end of season awards ceremony. We'll be breaking out the bow ties.
Yeah, exactly.
But tell us down in the comments if you think you've got a different idea for what the Bucks should be doing in the off season, particularly around the QBs, particularly around the coaches. Let us know what you think should be happening. And at the same time, as you're pressing that subscribe button and the bell, but thank you for sticking with us for a whole year. It's been so much fun making these podcasts, and it's been great having your input, and thank you for watching. It means the world to us. So we've got
500 subscribers.
Oh, yes.
500 mark. Yeah. Thanks to everyone for that.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So we will leave you with, I think, what we've all agreed is our highlight of the year. It's everyone singing Country Road, Take Me Home, in the Alliance Arena in Munich. A game we won. It was good times. That's right. He's got his hat on there. Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Mariana. And as ever,
thank you.
Go Bucks!
Go Bucks! Never jump ship.